week. And then that way allow the private sector to figure out what fits their needs, but also providing the support by communicating with the city of saying, okay, this is an opportunity here. And then are you willing to, are you interested in any type of incentive? And then allowing the city to decide and say, this is what they're looking for. I think that approach is more balanced, because normally the private sector tends to, they know what they want, you know, they know what they're looking for. And then they'll come in and say, what kind of incentives? That happened with like Trueline when they went into Wycliffe. They were looking at Euclid and Wycliffe and going back and forth. And so we were able just to be very responsive when they decided where they'd like to be, then just being responsive to their needs. And so that was beneficial. Same with them. There was an Italian company, though they didn't, I don't think they ever expanded here, but before COVID, they were looking at in the Northeast Ohio and then a couple other states. So just giving them what we could. I work and attend active with Team Neo, which and Jobs Ohio, and even communicating with Greater Cleveland Partnership, because they're good partners to us as the region. And they help bring financial opportunities to people too. So that's something else I work with and would bring, you know, make sure if a company was like our business was looking at coming in of saying, hey, these are opportunities.
Mr. President.
Councilman Jarvis Cavage, go ahead.
Thank you for coming or speaking to us tonight, Ms. Drake. Currently we have a subcommittee working on the master plan of our city.
Oh, okay.
We've had several developers express interest in growing and expanding businesses in our city. How important is it? It seems like a common theme is too firm of tax codes or the flexibility of zoning. How do other cities approach where you have a certain zoning issue to keep it a little flexible to meet the needs of, say, someone who wants to come into your city? Is that a big issue between other cities?
That is critical, critical, critical. That is one of your key development tools. So I look at, like, one of the things that a city can do for development is have a nimble zoning code that allows flexibility while still maintaining the integrity of the city. So one of the firms that I know is a sub on the RFP that we're reviewing is Kelphy Zoning. I attended American Planning Association, which is another key thing that sometimes you don't look at that as an economic development person, but to me, everything is about planning. I'm a planner by nature. I've had planning positions previously, but looking at what's our plan and are we flexible enough to allow those who would be benefit into the city to come in with ease and also have it structured enough that if it's something that doesn't meet the highest and best of the city, that, you know, it's not something that you have to go and do. One of the things I repeatedly hear is frustration about if there's a zoning process that is challenging or stringent, or if the developer feels they overreach, it is very frustrating. They get very frustrating. And sometimes you have to be very mindful that time is money for them. So for instance, I don't know if you have referendum zoning or not. I know that is a that is something that developers look at. And if the parcel is something that you would want to see as a city, but you have to go through this whole referendum process, then you might not even have that developer even stop and talk to you about your city because the time that it takes. So I did, actually all three cities have referendum. Eastlake got rid of referendum. Willoughby, they don't have referendum. And Menor has partial referendum. Partial referendum for, I think it is residential, but not commercial, if I recall correctly, because I did research very early on to take a look at the zoning, how the zoning codes are. And what I found was that, and talking and just getting educated, that is something that there's been businesses we'd like to see come in. And if it's not zoned, this just happened, Euclid Avenue, a business wanted to come in, but they have a paint shop. They can't do it in this location. They're walking, even though it would have been a class act type business. They're not going to build there. They're not going to go there. So they go somewhere else. And so that's where, like, taking a look at your zoning and saying, does our process afford enough opportunity to have it very well vetted by the time it gets to council, that we've listened to our citizenry, understand their needs, and also understand the needs of the city, and so that you don't have to go an extra step. I researched all the cities and I found over the past 30 years, none of the cities have ever gone against a request that went to referendum, which says to me that what used to be, and a lot of it got adopted in the 70s, and it isn't relevant today as it was in the 70s. The tides have changed. And it's also said that they vetted this process so well that they don't need all this extra step, because the citizenry still has the opportunity for a referendum if council and planning are so rogue and just aren't hearing them. They still always have that opportunity. And so that's just something I looked at, that 100% of the time over the past 30 years, they approved it. That just says processes are better and there's better vetting, which is important that they maintain a good system. So yes, that's key. That's a key issue. And it's something to look at. It's your choice, the citizen's choice, but it is something that developers do look at and might even just pass by if they feel that, because a zoning process that doesn't have referendum can get approved from 4 to 6, 7 months. If a zoning process dependent on the process can take without, that requires referendum, can take anywhere from, eight to 17 months for a parcel to be changed. And that's a long time for somebody to wait to find out if their parcel is going to be, able to be used in the manner which they'd like it to be. And then they tend to pass on by and find somewhere where it's an easier process, even if they have to do, a change. So yeah, that's very important.
Thank you.
Council President.
Councilwoman Taylor Draper, go ahead.
Hi, Monica. My name is Tanya. I have a clarification. Did you say that the cities, I guess the current state these days, that cities and with referendums, that the citizens are tending to lean toward approving these things? Or is that what you said?
Yes. So in the research I did for the three cities where I currently work, over the past 30, I went to the Board of Elections. So I did it off of data, because data is the best way to, figure out things. And what I found was, I went through all the votes, and what I found was every time an issue went to referendum, they affirmed the vote and changed the parcel zoning. So for over 30 years, every one of the cities, 100% of the time, approved the zoning or the zoning changes. So that says that there seems to be a good vetting process on the front end. I certainly would recommend public hearings during the planning and zoning meetings, as well as council. I would certainly recommend that council never approve something, you know, through emergency or you know, but go three vote or go three meetings and have a public hearing, because that affords a good vetting process for the public to be A, informed, and B, a voice either concerns or support, you know, whatever way. And then at the end of it, you know, council then making the recommendation. And at the end, it doesn't even, it doesn't go into effect for 30 days, which affords an opportunity that if people are just, the citizenry feels that they're just not hearing them, they have an opportunity to collect signatures and go to ballot. So, yeah.
That's encouraging. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
To hear that.
Council President?
Yes, is that Councilman Connect?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Ms. Drake, I have a question on your process. How long does it typically take in a community, and can that vary by a lot depending on the way that a community has their zoning structured and their tax laws and things like that?
Yes. So if you're looking at doing a zoning change, is that what you're referencing?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, when you come in and do your assessment, you know, if you were looking at Willoughby Hills, you know, how long do you think the process for you to assess what you think our codes are, how long does that normally take?
It's just a matter of sitting down, reading your zoning code, your charter. So it didn't take, and reading, like, if you have any strategic plans, master plans, taking a look at what you have and what you're currently working on, I would say a couple weeks, maybe. It's not a real long time consuming. It's more just taking the time, you know, going in, reading it, and then if I needed to, like, get information from Board of Elections, like if what I did for putting together the PowerPoints for the other cities, I would just get a hold of them and get that information from them. They were very helpful to me when I did it the first time, just assessing, like, zoning. But it's all in your, you know, normally I imagine your stuff's online, is it not? Like, yeah. Your...
Yes.
Yeah. So that's not too hard to do.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions?
President?
Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
Hi, Monica. Good to see you again.
Good seeing you, Mayor.
Just real quick, the focus we're talking about here over the next several months is really on recovery versus pure development. How would you differentiate your role in assisting with recovery versus, a primary development type of position?
With recovery, it's just if there is a list of businesses, I would ask it to get a list of businesses, reach out, introduction. I would think I would see, maybe even if you needed to gather information as to what they're looking for and their needs, that is something that can be done. I would get an inventory of available buildings, because with recovery, with COVID recovery, understanding what you have would lead to even having getting that information together, putting on the website, communicating to people, this is available. Because even during COVID, there has been movement on things, businesses opening. So that first piece, if you needed assistance doing with your grants or any type of reviews, stuff like that, and that's something I know I'm working with in the other ones, though you guys are much further ahead with that than the other cities are. So I'm doing that right now. I'm trying to think. I know with the PPP, that program's coming close to, Well, the PPP is coming close to end, and I think all the idle grants were funding was used up. And I haven't heard a lot more out of Small Business Administration on additional funding there. So just, I would also say getting a handle on where the businesses are, how they feel, you know, coming out on the other side of this, what they see as their changes of their business and what they see as might be something that the city isn't thinking of that they could use help with, you know, just even if it's small things. I mean, small things like, hey, can we have sandwich boards out because people are, you know, open flags out because it's against zoning, but we really need people to know that we're open. I mean, something that minimal by reaching out and communicating with them, you know, that's how you learn even their small needs, yeah, which can make a difference.
Yeah, Monica, by way of example, we have a the shops of Willoughby Hills. Scott Scheel has been really trying to redevelop that, and this COVID has, you know, affected him as well. And so, you know, we have an ordinance on our agenda right now that where they're asking us to, you know, give them an abeyance with regard to zoning to allow the Amazon trucks to park in that large parking lot over there, while they need to. You know, yeah, it gives him a little bit of income that he's not getting because he's having a hard time getting new business right now.
Right.
And so,
right.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things that, you know, that's to me, in my opinion, that's an easy thing to do.
Right.
You know, it's not bordering any residential properties. It's, you know, it's a temporary thing, and it's helping our business community to continue doing things that are going to help us in the long run.
Right. And that's exactly something like I see. If, you know, by reaching out or having that communication, then you learn about something that easy that council can easily fix if it fits your, you know, it fits what you feel is good for the city and easily help them and make progress. And that's good. Yeah. So I just see initially it's connecting with people. And also having something that people have that somebody they can contact, because I've had that a lot where just making that initial call and then maybe, you know, 2 months down the line, I'll get a call back from somebody and saying, hey, can you help me with this? And so that's why I think this is really important to, you know, take this opportunity, especially with COVID, to connect with people and just let them know they're cared about.
Council sure. President?
Yes, Councilwoman Taylor Draper, go ahead.
I have one more question, Monica, and I'm not sure if you're able to do this. Are you able to walk us through a typical transaction situation? If you're the developer and we have a piece of property, do you reach out to the developer? Do you reach out to the business? Do the businesses reach out to you? What's the typical situation? How does the whole communication start?
For Team Neo and their process where they get businesses that reach out to them. If I saw something on their communication that fits a need, I would reach out to them and let them know that, hey, we've got a piece of property, it fits your needs. Other ones, it's you wind up with a developer that is looking for something of X, Y, and Z. Like they normally get a sense of, I want to be in kind of in this area, but just understanding the inventory that might be there. So that's why our CoStar and just even posting properties that are available on your website is something that's very helpful because they can see it. So that's always been I found helpful. So I'll get people that reach out to me. And then I'll provide them with information. Shoregate up in Willowick is building some outbuildings with drive-throughs. And so sometimes people go, hey, what do you think of this? So I'll get a hold of the gentleman and say, hey, contact this company because they have people that do that. That's our, you know, role for the leasing agent. So I wouldn't necessarily be the initiator of that call, but I would contact and say, hey, Brian, you know, reach out to this company. Here's the contact person, you know, let and make sure they know. And so there's actually a couple national businesses that are supposed to be signing leases and letters of intent there, just, you know, because they're changing and putting in drive-throughs. So also that's something, even like I was thinking about, like in some of your plaza areas, are there room, space for outbuildings that have drive-throughs, and does the zoning provide for that? Because that is a COVID kind of thing where you're getting more takeout, you're getting people wanting to buy drive-throughs. So it varies, but it might be like somebody with a plaza, hey, would you be interested in developing that if it fits, you know, fits the city's zoning? Would you be interested in building an outbuilding that has some drive in, putting drive-throughs in it and working with them to get through that process?
I see. Thank you. So it's just a mixture.
Yeah, it's a mixture. And like, for instance, True Line, Mayor Barbish heard of it, and then he contacted me, and then I did reach out, and then just continue working it. Sometimes I'm like the point person to help people just navigate processes. I jumped in and helped. There's a little place called the Hemp Spot up in Willowick that just opened not real long ago, and he was just struggling getting through to get his permits. So by just getting it, I got together with him and figured out what he needed, and then made follow-up calls and figured out where the hiccup was, and we had like the piece missing taken care of in a day where he'd been floundering for 3 weeks. So, you know, just helping facilitate, sometimes it's that kind of thing.
Monica, are there some things, like, I think with COVID, my guess is a lot of these small businesses that we have in Willoughby Hills are struggling with maybe even just rent payments and, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, is there something out there? I mean, is that something we can help them with? Because, you know, they're not going to last.
Well, the payroll protection program was one, and the EIDL, economic impact disaster loan program through the Small Business Administration, were the two programs that the federal government had put together to help with rent payments, payroll payments, that kind of thing, especially the PPP. Those programs, there's still money in the PPP. So if they didn't get a PPP, then it would be worthwhile saying, hey, you know, get a hold of your bank and just making them aware. Some people weren't aware of both programs. Some were aware of the PPP, but not the EIDL program. And so when I was making reach out calls, let them know the EIDL program is actually supposed to go through December 31st. Though, like I said, that program seemed to have been underfunded. Unfortunately, more so than the other program. And so that went rapidly. Even the fact that one of my very, very dear friends from back when he worked for Congressman Gilmore and I lived at Put-in Bay and ran the port up at Put-in Bay, he runs the Small Business Administration down in the Columbus area, and he's over 60 counties. So like if I need Small Business Administration type things and I'm not, you know, needing a quick reach out, a lot of times I'll reach out to my friend and he'll, you know, get back to me just like that. And then we can help I've helped a business over in Kirtland navigate a problem she was having just by, you know, texting Everett and saying, hey, I need a little help. And, you know, he's always willing to help me. So those are things that, you know, I look at, how can we help? But I definitely would, you know, if somebody's struggling, I would definitely have them get with a bank, because based on kind of what I'm hearing, that there seems to be a little bit of PPP money still available that wasn't fully spent. I just don't know if they've been extending it a lot. It just, I don't know if the cutoff's now been extended to this point or not.
Okay.
Mr. President.
Councilwoman Fellows, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Monica. It's nice to see you again.
Good seeing you.
Hi. Same here. Two things I wanted to mention. So I mean, this is sort of going backwards, and I don't know how you find the rationale for why it happened versus COVID. But, you know, several years ago, we had four large buildings, business buildings, medical buildings on the southeastern corner of Chardon behind like where the lobster pot is back in there. And I mean, years ago, all the businesses were consolidated to one building because the owner could not, you know, it wasn't cost effective to heat all the buildings, use electricity all the buildings. So this was way before pre-COVID. So the question becomes, why couldn't we maintain, you know, four major buildings of business in the city of Willoughby Hills when we have the facilities to do that? And there's other little pockets like that here and there. And I'm not asking you, you know, the question, it's just a question that I have. The other thing is, you mentioned that the city owns property. Mayor, I don't know how many properties we own. I know for sure two, I think three. But years ago, there was a push for the western side of 91 from Chardon to the Cleveland Clinic to be developed. And there was a huge outcry from the community that they did not want that. I mean, they have the golf course on the other side, plus there were a couple other streets on the other side. And so the city purchased one of those properties. So we have a rental property there. And also the diocese owns a home there as well. And the intent was to thwart that all turning into a business or an industrial park or whatever the vision was at that time. I know, you know, when I speak to residents, they very much like to keep their 1 acre zoning. I know business brings in money for the city, but there's a lot of areas that are empty, and how can we revitalize those? That's one of the first things that Councilman Zagarek said. How do we reinvent something instead of recreate, you know, instead of creating something from scratch too? So just some of my thoughts.
Thank you, Councilman Phillips. Yeah, we have plenty of space that we can, you know, as Nancy and Dan said, reinvent, and hopefully try and find a way to make them attractive, make businesses aware of them. And I think, you know, I think one of the things that is going to come out of COVID is that businesses are going to realize that they don't need all of their people coming into the office, and so they might need smaller spaces, which we have a lot of, I think, smaller spaces here that they could just keep their critical people that need to be together, need to be in the office. Mm-hmm. And then let their other people go to virtual so they can, you know, decrease their expenses.
Yes. And to Nancy's point, perfect example of what you're talking about, Nancy, is over at Tapestry, which that used to be in Wycliffe, that used to be a hotel, and it's now assisted living facility. And it was totally repurposed and is beautiful inside. That also took, actually, they had to put it on the ballot to get that rezoned to permit that to move forward. And so I know even the mayor was out helping collect signatures to help facilitate that change of zoning. So yes, it's taking a look at your inventory and then being creative and what are the possibilities of this, and then helping that along, as well as other aspects of it. Sometimes, you know, you'll see a lot of mixed use or even independent senior living, that people that want to be in the city but maybe want to have their own home. So an acre is a lot to maintain, where depending on what it is, like when I've gone from 3/4 to a half, and now I have a third of an acre. And so I just, as time goes, I really don't want to be maintaining that large lot. So those are things I know might be not changing everything, but is it somewhere where that might fit in the city? And is that a need of the city? And I don't know, because that is, I found, like when we went through the process in Kirtland, the community was telling us what they needed and wanted to see. And that was something very important to them. So it's just by learning what the city, you know, what the citizenry is looking for, helped frame out the direction of the city.
Mr. President. One of the other properties, now that I remember, that the city owns, was zoned residential. It's up by West Miller. It's tucked behind the north side of 91 and Bishop. It's landlocked kind of in between from West Miller. So that went to the ballot to be rezoned for a nursing home or assisted living by the Osbournes. And then it died, and then we ended up buying the property. So that's about 12 or 17 acres. That's a big chunk of land back there. It butts up to Wycliffe. And then we have the house on Chardon, and we have a house on Somme, and I don't know where else. Andy might know.
I think that's it.
No, I think that's right. And there's also one of the lots on Chardon next to City Hall. There used to be a house, and it came down. So there's a vacant area there.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Is there area by the airport that the city owns?
There is area by the airport, but my recollection from our past economic development director was that it's not buildable because the airport emergency way is through there. And so I don't know. I mean, it's something I'd love for us to recheck into, but last I heard, the airport doesn't allow anything on there because it's in the emergency right away for the airport. So last I heard, it sounded like it was effectively not anything we could use.
It depends on the height. It depends on the location, because there's one-way safety areas. There's back slopes that you could maybe build to, depending on how close it is to the runway. Build, you know, a certain height, but you have to keep under a certain height. You can't penetrate the surfaces of the runway. So that would just be something to look at and see what is it, what's around there. You've even got land on airport grounds that's actually in Willoughby Hills that some people have to pay. If they want to build a hangar on that property, they have to pay property taxes. So even though the airport itself is tax exempt, if somebody builds a commercial hangar for their aircraft, or not even commercial, but even for private aircraft, they would have to pay the city property tax. So even though some areas might appear not buildable, it just depends on slopes and the back slopes and the location. And like I said, there's even potential for hangar development to get property tax out of the airport, because that comes back on the tax duplicate. So
yeah. Well, I don't want to take any more of your time, Monica. You've given us a lot of information to think about. I'll just ask, you know, in general, from our council, you know, would you be supportive of, you know, bringing Monica on to help us in this recovery process?
Hello, President?
This thing on? Councilman Vice President Klein.
Well, my answer is, you know, if you look in the News Herald, it seems almost every day there's a story about a business opening somewhere in Lake County. So there's opportunity. And I think we need someone to help us, direct us, to follow up for us. So I'm in favor of it.
Thank you. Councilman Zagarek, you look like you have a thought.
I have a couple. I'm definitely for making what we have better and taking advantage of newer opportunities. We have the, for lack of a better word, we have the Lohman Plaza area, and that needs attention, and that's got tremendous potential, I believe. When we were talking about the airport, there's empty offices down near the airport. You know, maybe we can do something down there. Do we need somebody on top of that? Absolutely. You know, but again, well, we would have to measure it and make sure that our investment, you know, warranted that. Of course, we do it to, Chris, you and I had this conversation before, you know, where we've got to raise some more dollars. And how do we do that? We do that through business and development and redevelopment, helping out businesses, making sure they're strong. So, you know, I would say yes. I mean, we,
yeah. Keep in mind, we're talking about, you know, bringing her on for the remainder of this year to help us with the recovery. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, anything beyond that, we would have to talk again. If we wanted to do something more permanent, that'd be a later discussion, I think.
I gotcha.
Or fees structured for that, for your services.
Councilman Jarvis Gavich is asking a question about finances. I think Councilman Jarvis Gavich, because this is a COVID-related expense for this year, at least for this temporary position, this would be coming out of our CARES Act money.
Okay. Mr. President?
Councilwoman Fellows, go ahead.
I'm just curious, because we're talking about personnel, should this not be a polling now, but something discussed in executive session?
Well, we talked about that a little bit. And because this is actually the cost of hiring Monica for this temporary position is under the mayor's spend limit, we're not talking about a lot of money here. We really aren't going to, council would not be really involved in hiring her. This is just for us to have an opportunity to hear what she would be doing, ask questions, and I think for all intents and purposes, the administration just wants to know if, you know, before they just do something, if we would be, if we are supportive of that idea.
Yeah, Mr. President?
Yes, Mayor Gardner.
Yeah, that's exactly it, you know, because obviously we'd have to coordinate this with Ms. Drake's other employers. So before we try to make a big mess and ask Monica and, you know, Mayors Regovich, Potter and Barbish to get into the, you know, into doing this, you know, we'd be asking, you know, just for a separate 3-month contract that we'd use our CARES money for. I just want to make sure that everyone thinks it's a good idea. And then during our budget process coming up the next few months, we can look at, you know, whether a longer term thing would be a good idea, and if we've got the funds for it in the city in next year's budget. Thank you.
Mr. President, so I support that plan.
Thank you.
I do as well.
Thank you.
I do as well.
Yeah, I would too.
All right. Councilwoman Taylor, yes. Did you?
I think it would be worth it.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Mr. Mayor, I think we're all in support of what you know, helping our business. Basically, what we're saying, I think everybody's saying here, is we're in support of helping our small businesses to help them recover from this stuff and to help make a stronger business community. So,
no, thank you.
We'll leave it to you to see if you can make it work.
Monica, if you just give my office a call, we'll figure out what we need to do to make sure we don't put you in bad graces with your regular employers, and see what we can do to get this done ASAP.
Okay, super. I'll get a hold of you and Gloria, and then let Mayor Barbish know as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monica. I appreciate
your
time.
Thank you, Monica.
You can drop whatever you want.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can drop or you can stay, whatever you wish.
Oh, I have two more meetings to hop on to. Thank goodness for Zoom. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. All right. So the next item on our discussions are we have items 2, 3, and 4 are ordinances that we've discussed in the past. The temporary enforcement abeyance for the shop to Willoughby Hills is on third reading. The Chief Gandy's vacation carryover that we've talked about in the past. And then also, first of all, I'll talk about those two. Does anyone have anything further they want to ask questions or have concerns or comments on either of those two ordinances?
Mr. President.
Yes.
So at the last meeting, there was a potential for changes to occur with the Amazon trucks. And I think one of the reasons we left it on second reading was to see if there was going to be any difference 2 weeks later. Is that something that Mr. Shields working on or not?
Councilwoman Taylor Draper, I believe, had a conversation, and I'll let her impart that.
At this moment, I don't know of any resolution, so I would be happy to reach out to him to find out an update.
But as of now, did I understand you correctly? But as of now, they would appreciate the extension or the abeyance.
Right, because the trucks are still over there. So I don't know.
If it goes away, then it's moved.
Right. So I would assure us to continue with it. Right.
So Mr. President, so this ordinance doesn't have an emergency clause on it. So the ordinance is for 18 months, and without the emergency clause, it doesn't go into act for 30 days. So actually, in reality, it's 19 months.
That's a good point, Nancy. Thank you. If council wants to, on the dais, if they want to amend that to keep it at the 18 months, I personally have no issue with that.
But I don't have any issue with 19 months. I just think council should know that that's the process
right.
that this ordinance
good
is
point.
Written.
Yeah. So I just consider that when we talk about this on Thursday. If you feel, emotionally concerned or logically concerned about 18 versus 19, then certainly make that, I would suggest you make a motion to amend it. If you're fine with it, then we can talk about, passing it as is or not. So thank you for pointing that out.
Declaring this emergency?
What's that, Councilman Jarmuskiewicz?
Would that be just changing the wording to declare it as an emergency?
It would just be adding
amending.
What's called the emergency tag. Right. Just says, so it makes it go into effect immediately, which then makes it exactly 18 months, where if we don't add the emergency tag, then effectively they get an extra month because it won't go into effect until 30 days. So personally, I don't think it's a big deal, but it's up to you guys.
Like I said, I don't either. I just wanted to point it out.
Agreed. Yep, I got
you.
Okay. Then I would move on to number four, which is the COVID-19 hazard pay benefit ordinance. And we did first reading on that last time. I'll just give my personal opinion on this as we have, as I've read it and thought about it, I certainly think that, as many of us were, huddled up at home and staying safe with our families in the earlier, when we really didn't know much about this virus, our city employees were, coming in and working and keeping the city running. Our safety and our service and our administrative folks were all in here running mayor's court and running fire calls and police calls and, taking care of our roads. And, I think to me, we shouldn't hold this up any longer. And I think also probably, from my understanding, would certainly go a long way with the union, seeing that we're on board with, giving them something that it makes sense as far as what they helped us out with during a very uncertain time. So I'll pass that. So I guess what I'm saying is I'd be okay with passing this this week is my personal opinion, but I leave it up to you guys. Questions, concerns, comments.
Mr. President.
Yes, Councilman Zagarek.
I agree with you. I think that is something we could, look at passing on second reading. So,
yeah.
Mr. President?
Yes, Councilman Jarmuskiewicz.
Does the hazard pay benefits, as we've described it, meet all the requirements to make it legal to do that, or would there be any problems with it? Is there any
question? My understanding is that it does meet the requirements. Mr. Mayor, if you have other comments, I think this has been vetted out by our law department, correct?
Yeah, and it's also one of the things there, one of the updated guidance on CARES Act funding does specify hazard pays permissible.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, thank you. Okay, any other comments before we move on? All right. Then the last one is the general liability insurance. Hopefully all of you had an opportunity to read all that wonderful material that came out. There's quite a large packet of the exhibit for this. And I know for those of you that are in council chambers, there's a couple of packets that were fully printed for you to kind of take a look at if you didn't have a chance to look at them online. My understanding, based on what I looked at, the cost of this new program is about $3,100 more than what we paid last year. However, what they showed us was if we had the same number and type of assets last year when we did this versus this year, our cost would have actually been about $400 more expensive. So the only reason it's gone up the $3,100 is because we've obtained, we have more cars, more assets, more value to our assets. And so that's where it is. However, for those of you who don't know the history, back in 2015, I believe, we were up for renewal, and the city administration was pushing to just stay with the same insurance carrier. And at that time, I know at least myself and Councilwoman Greer were very vocal about, we thought it was a good idea to go out to bid, just because why not? Let's make sure. And ultimately, we ended up going with this USI who we have now, and it saved us about $25,000 and $30,000 a year. And while I know administration was very nervous about switching to somebody who didn't know us very well and what kind of service we were going to get, I have heard very good things, and very, you know, people are very happy about that. And then before I go to questions on that, I know Gloria Majeski's on, and she was instrumentally involved in this. Gloria, is there anything that we should, you know, that you want to let council know about this that would help us understand what's?
Sure. I want to say that, you know, Mayor Gardner presented it to you to bring up Thursday night, because you do have the option if you still want to go out to bid. And I want to just give like a brief history that really is not included in the proposed ordinance, that especially some of the new council members may not be aware of. But the process to go for the insurance renewal, even though it renews in mid-October, actually began in July. That's why we asked you to adopt a motion to allow us to go out to bid at your July meeting before you went into recess. We thought it was important to have that under our belts if we decided we want to go to bid. And then we requested from the insurance company something they call a claims run loss summary, so we could see what our claim usage was, what it looked like over the past few years, just in case we were going to go out to bid. That's what you provide when you go out to bid. And then in the meantime, USI was actually working on our renewal, and they asked us to review all of our property and vehicles to ensure that everything was accounted for. And they had previously sent out a company called CBiz, which looks at all of our properties and increased the value of some of our properties because they felt they were a little underinsured based on today's market. And then Mayor Gardner and I and the finance director looked at those. We concurred with their assessment, with the exception of the Grange property, which had an error in the square footage of the building, which inaccurately increased the property value. So we got that fixed. And then Assistant Law Director Loby and I actually met with our current agent from USI. We discussed Loby's concern for legal counsel permitted by USI and our desire to go out to bid to seek better legal representation options. In addition, I inquired about getting a premium reduction and a three-year rate guarantee, which is what they had given us when we first went on with them, rather than going year to year to year. That was back in 2015. And then the agent advised us that USI had taken on two new law firms, which were two that Loby was very pleased with. And it seemed like that concern was addressed to our satisfaction. And then the agent would return to speak with the underwriters about our policy premium request and continue to assess our property and vehicles for pricing. And then in early September, USI advised us that they did not have premium figures back yet for the October 14th renewal. However, it appeared that the CBiz's assessment of the property values increases would probably result in a policy premium increase of about $3,500 to $4,000 a year, and that they would most likely offer us 1 year renewal without an increase, or an option with a 3 year rate guarantee that would absorb the CBiz increase. And then Mayor Gardner actually had a telephone conversation with me, the law director, and the finance director, and we discussed our option to go out to bid at that time or consider accepting one of the probable proposals from USI. And all those people in that meeting agreed that it would be in the best interest of the city to consider the three-year rate guarantee with even a possible premium increase based on the fact that the first thing going out to bid to have the classified ad expense over the 2 weeks of advertising. Number two, we'd have to submit that claim run loss summary along with any known outstanding claims that may or may not have been reported to USI. And I knew at that time there's at least five substantial claims. One is the canine, in fact, that we're not sure if that's if that motorist was insured or whatever. So we have some things looming out there that could be, you know, something that would tag, be a real disadvantage to us. USI offers the city grants for the training and the sponsorship. And as Chris mentioned, their quote in 2015 was nearly $30,000 less than the city's long-term one. And then the current quote also includes the revised CBIZ appraisal rate for the properties. So after the meeting with the mayor, we received an unexpected email, which I passed along to you before I went on vacation, from the agent. And he gave us the reduction in premium as well as a three-year rate guarantee. So personally, I was really, really happy because I felt like we got everything really that we went to the table to get to negotiate without the, we know the customer service and everything like Mike Lucas pointed out is just really outstanding in all the other communities. They're very, well known. So I guess my last point is that the city council has the right to go out to bid. And, Mayor Gardner just asked if I would present you with the process that we took. And at least this year, I know Councilwoman Fellows will be happy. You have two meetings that you can discuss this with. I know sometimes it seems like we roll in at the last minute and ask you to approve something. It's not that way. I mean, we've really been working on this. And now, you have two meetings to take a look at it and decide if you want to move forward or what you want to do. That's it, Chris.
Thank you, Gloria. Any questions for or comments that anyone wants to make regarding this?
Mr. President?
Councilman Jarmuskiewicz, go ahead.
I was just curious. There was a section in our packet that had active assailant coverage. Is that something the city had before or something new that's in it?
That's part of the policy, and it actually, that's the other nice thing about the USI. They have like a library resource that is, we actually pulled the employee handbook off of that Lobey's looking at. They have a lot of resources, the terrorism policy, all that stuff. They had the like a special section just for the police department. That's just one of their benefits. And they also had attached, the grants and stuff. They were just showing you what their benefits are.
Okay.
Mr. President?
Yes, Councilman Zagaric.
It seems like as the world has changed, insurance companies have had to change as well. When you talk about active assailant, Joe, but what my point is, as I look at this, if we're going to pay nearly the same premium and they're going to lock it in for about 3 years, and I understand they've been more than good to us on claims, it's kind of a no-brainer. So that's my opinion.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mr. President.
Councilman Fellows.
So maybe the question's to Gloria. So we had damage to a light pole or a signal receptor about a year ago that we didn't have coverage for. And I think we fixed that at that point. So that's part of what's in the coverage now. I don't remember all the details.
I think they ended up covering that.
No.
Actually, didn't they? Gloria?
Actually, that was in 2015, right after we went on the policy. And it was the signal, the whole signal box at the Bishop. Station right by the muffler or gas station place right on the border. And mm-hmm. I actually worked with the agent at Rob Beglin at that time. He said, Gloria, there's a one-time policy thing that if you didn't know it was your property and you didn't have it covered, we could sneak it in and cover it. And mm-hmm. that's how we got that covered. They paid for it in full.
But going forward, we have coverage for that type of incident.
We do. Actually, if you look at the policy, it shows even all the signal boxes. I think there's 8 signal boxes that we've okay. identified. It's really good. I mean, if you look through it, the question about property, I mean, you could look at that policy and look at how many parcels does the city own, because we went through everything, every parcel, every vehicle. Made sure that, okay, you're telling me there's how many pump stations, make sure we had all those covered. What are the names of them? We got pictures of them. It's very, very comprehensive.
Yeah. Mr. President.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Following up on Gloria's response to Councilman Fellows, that was part of what CBIZ did, was make sure that we really did a comprehensive review of city assets.
Great. Other comments, questions? Okay, then the next order is the public portion. I will open up public portion at, what have we got, 7:13 p.m. And I will just ask you to raise your hand if you would like to make a comment, and be sure to state your name and address for the record. And let's see if we have anybody here. All right. I do not see anybody. Nobody's waving at their screen, right?
Nope.
No.
All right, then I will close public portion at 7:14 p.m. All right. Is there anything else with the, I know, I believe we are still working on a final draft. Gloria, am I mistaken? We're still working on a final draft for the insurance ordinance, but we wanted to get it on. So we may have an amended ordinance for Thursday. Is that true, Gloria? I think that's what I've asked.
I was looking for some direction on that with Chris. Chris, do you want me to work with Joanne on that? She copied what Vicki did last year, and I thought Vicki's history, the policy 2 years before, was much better written. It's all what you want. I mean, do you want the history incorporated in that?
Yeah, I think it would help. So yeah, definitely. If you could help with Joanne with doing that, that would be very good. And then we can put that in place to review that.
Okay, that we'll get it to you before. Okay.
All right, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Anything else from anyone?
Mr. Right. President?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Just one good piece of news that came in late last week. I think you'll all remember one of the things that we were doing was removing the city's last underground storage tank. It was a fuel tank back behind City Hall, sort of to the side, beyond the old sand volleyball court. That tank was removed a couple of weeks ago. One of the concerns with tank removals is always that they might have leaked. We got the testing back last week and got a clean report. No water, no ground contamination. So that's a potential liability that is gone. I'd like to thank Mark for his hard work in coordinating the city doing some of the work to save us some of the money, which is great. With that clean bill of health, the tank we're using now is provided by our fuel supplier. So it's above ground. It has secondary containment. So that's just good news. It was one of the things I was a little nervous about when I came on, and I'm glad that, here 9.5 months later, it's out of our hair.
That's good news. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Ms. Councilman Fellows, go ahead.
So, Mayor, I just want to let you know, and I don't remember her last name, but yesterday Judy passed away. She is the original owner of the stables that Jennifer and Scott Verrill have now. longtime resident of Willoughby Hills. She had horses for a long time at those stables. So I can probably find out. I'll get her last name from Jennifer for you, but I just wanted to pass that on.
Oh, thank
you. Very nice. Judy Wong, W-O-N-G.
That's right. I don't know if it was Chinese or Japanese. Thanks, Gloria.
She was super nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she passed away yesterday.
Mr. President? Also, Gert passed away this week or last week.
Who did? A
long-time resident on Eddie Road.
Say it again, Joe. What's the name? Say it again.
Maria Gerk.
Lisa Fazio's.
Yeah, Lisa Fazio's mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Frank Gerk's wife.
Yeah.
Mr. President.
Yes, Councilman Zucker.
I ran into Lisa and she complimented our safety forces, particularly our fire department, throughout that. She said they did a great job. So,
good.
That's all.
Okay. Well, I am going to adjourn then at 7:18 p.m. and I will see you all on Thursday. Have a great rest of the week. Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Night. Night.